Mapping Project is a vision which encapsulates new work, the commissioning of writers, poets, choreographers, composers, filmmakers, video makers and photographers.
Welcome to the first episode of the new podcast series, Past Forward, the Wapping Project at 20. My name is Gareth Owens, I'll be your host for the series, and I'm delighted to open the series with a conversation with the artist Jane Proffitt, whose installation Conductor was the opening event, the opening artistic commission for the Wapping Project when it took over the hydraulic power station in the Docklands in East London, under, of course, the visionary guidance, curatorship and creation of the late great Jules Wright, whose idea the Wapping Project was growing out of her earlier and ongoing work with the Women's Playhouse Trust. Jane, you had this extraordinary opportunity to kind of test out your artistic practice in this space that had never really been considered before as an artistic venue, except for the occasional commissions that Jules had already undertaken in the transition of the building from a hydraulic power station through to an artistic venue with a restaurant, a bookshop and other attached event activities. So when you were presented with this extraordinary building in the East End of London, what was your first response to it, your sense of what you might be able to do in there?
Well, the first time I encountered the building was when I was looking at spaces with the Irish performance artist Nick Stewart. We were going all across London with another curator looking for spaces where temporary video works might be shown. So when I first encountered Wapping, there were buddleia trees growing out of the inside of the interior walls, and it wasn't a renovated building really at that point. We arrived at the building having had a really long day. It was pretty cold. We'd been looking around amazing spaces like Wilton's Music Hall, and we pulled up at this building and knocked on the door. A very worn door was opened, and we encountered a guy in a boiler suit and a woolly hat. And he started to show us around the building, and it was extraordinary because this caretaker was telling us the history of the building. I was immediately very excited by it, but I was also somewhat intimidated by the amount of equipment that was in the main sort of engine room when you first entered the building. And it was, you know, architecturally the equipment was quite dominating. And then we looked into the boiler house, this vast, very cold and clammy, empty-ish space. And I thought that was a very exciting space. It turned out that the caretaker was actually Joshua Wright, the architect. And he was, you know, down and dirty, working and doing things on site. But I didn't know that till much later. So actually, a couple of years went by. We tried to get some money to do a project, and the curator I was working with said, you know, Jane, your project isn't a video, so it's not going to work, you know, for my series. And that's really when I started to meet more regularly with Jules Wright. The piece that I proposed was to really think about not just the immediate site of Wapping Hydraulic Power Station, but it where it was more generally and what its previous purpose had been. So I became fascinated by what wasn't visible. The fact that underneath the building were these vast tanks, and all around it were the Dockland basins and the Thames. And what I really wanted to do was just sort of pull the water level up into the building. And of course, now when I think about the project, if it were to ever to be restaged, it would have a completely different meaning, because now when we think about pulling up the level of the water, we immediately think about climate change and how that is likely to impact the height of rivers like the Thames. So again, you know, the site specificity was also something that was specific to that time. that making the work, therefore, was really protracted. It looked like it wasn't going to get made. I did drawings. You know, funding a project like that is complex. The space is really, really large, and it was completely lined with a pond liner. So before that had to be lined with fiberboard to make sure the pond liner was on a really smooth surface. Then we had to pump in 72 tons of water with two fire ladders. So all the fire crews arrived to pump it in. So it was a very big undertaking. And I guess one of the things that was really different for me in my career at that stage was that I was an artist that made net art projects and interactive digital works. And this was, for me, an amazing opportunity to inhabit a different part of my artistic personality. I was given permission and enabled by Jules Wright and Joshua to create something that just sprang out of my imagination, literally through a dream, and wasn't digital in any way. And actually that caused some difficulties in my career, because I had friends and people that I'd worked with for many years who felt that it was a radical change in direction, a kind of abandonment of my new media roots, if you like. But to me, it never was, because when I did my undergraduate degree at Sheffield Polytechnic at Salter Lane, I worked with the performance artist Fran Hegarty. It was where I met the Irish performance artist Nick Stewart, who I was with when I first saw Wapping Power Station. And I was really heavily influenced by live art. I worked as a performance artist who also used media when I was a student. And the whole experience of my piece and of my experience of Wapping was of the immersion, the bodily experience of being in this vast, cold space, the change in sound, the impact when I blacked out the space of what it was like to stand in a space and your eyes gradually become accustomed to the dark. So it was absolutely live art for me.
Now, it's a tremendously evocative retelling of your first encounter with Joshua Wright, of course, a key player in the Wapping Project history, and one all too modest, of course. And your description of first meeting him absolutely fits with my own experience of Josh. So that's a lovely story. But I'd like now to introduce the most recent work made in relation to the Wapping Hydraulic Power Station by the Wapping Project. And this is the album-length recording by the wonderful musician Laura Cannell. The album's titled The Earth With Her Crowns, and it was recorded inside the Hydraulic Power Station, where Jane Prophet, of course, installed her conductor to launch the building incarnation of the Wapping Project back in October 2020. Laura Cannell recorded her album in a series of single takes over 2 days in February and March 2019. And this is the Wapping Project's final response to the iconic building that defined their commissioning for over two decades. And I think it's very fair to say that Laura's music captures the building's resonance sonically, in a literal and metaphorical sense, just as, of course, Jane Prophet's work illuminated the Boiler House at the time of the launch of the formal gallery in the same space. So I think we have a wonderful consideration here in this first episode of the podcast series Pass Forward, the Wapping Project 20, to consider how work can both be installed visually, architecturally, physically, and of course also sonically, if you like, with Laura's work. So we're going to be listening to a track from the album, After You Left, by Laura Cannell. Thank you. But we have to remind, of course, ourselves that we're on an audio platform here, and we do need to give a sense of the actual work in a visual way to the listening audience, because it's extremely striking. And I'd like to just draw attention again in advance of that to its title, Conductor, because, of course, you as the artist are, in a way, like an orchestral conductor. You're scoring the space, shall we say, with your installation. But of course, the idea of conducting is absolutely central to the nature of the building. And you, in a way, have played on both those meanings of the word, I think, because of the nature of what you installed in the space. And I just wonder if you could give a little sort of image sensibility of the work to our listeners.
Yeah, so the piece that I made for Wapping was really like a homage to the building and its location. So in this very large boiler room, I had the room lined with pond liner to about a foot deep and blacked out the space so it's pitch black. And I had looked at the building and that particular space, and I talked to Joshua Wright, the architect, and noticed the girders at the top of the space that are actually holding tanks that are on top of the building. And they're very equally spaced, and I use those to create a grid system. And from that grid system, I suspended 120 electroluminescent cables, thin, thin lines of light. We pumped in 72 tons of water. So in fact, we made the bottom of this very large space a huge reflecting pool, turned off all the ambient lights, and the reflecting pool was lit by these 120 lines of light in a grid. What was important also was that the only way of seeing the work was to enter from the bright space outside, open a door, step onto what, if you could have seen it, was a very elegant steel floating staircase that Joshua Wright had designed. But to stand at the top of that stair on a platform, you were one story into the space of this double height space, and you looked across and down into this vast space, and it looked as if those lines of light went on forever because they were reflected in the surface of the water. You had no sense of whether the water was an inch or fathoms deep, and in fact most people felt it was fathoms deep. So it created a very particular kind of body experience, slightly vertigo, the difference. It was like an echo chamber, like a whispering gallery, because of the water and the acoustics.
That's tremendous. I mean, that really does conjure it up, I think, for all of us. And I would urge listeners who can't quite imagine what it's like to have a look. Of course, it doesn't begin to do justice to the bodily encounter with the work that one would have in the space itself. But do look at the Vimeo channel the Wapping Project runs, and you will find a 12-minute piece there giving a sense of Jane's remarkable work, Conductor, of course, in 2000. Now, we're speaking exactly 20 years since the Wapping Project formally opened as a gallery and restaurant in the hydraulic power station. And this work, of course, you know, is very hard to imagine being commissioned by anybody, any large institution, let alone a new startup operation in a part of East London which then by no means was on the cultural map. So you've mentioned, of course, you've been looking at spaces, thinking about work, and then responded very strongly to the space as you found it, Jane. But how distinctive was it in finding, of course, Jules and Joshua, and feeling that actually pretty much anything was possible? As you said, it came out of your imagination directly into the room. And that, you know, for an artist, of course, is a gift, but also by no means a given in the cultural climate of 2000, let alone 2020.
Well, I think when I came up with the idea, you know, my brief was to think of a video work, and I just failed, frankly, because I couldn't stop thinking about the physical sensation of being in the space. Although, bearing in mind, I was standing on the ground floor, there wasn't the, you know, it was a different experience, but I was just struck by it. And So I very sheepishly, really, submitted this drawing of how I imagined the piece. I'd never worked with electroluminescent cable and water, although I had worked with different luminescent materials as an undergraduate. And so when I presented the drawing, I knew the logistics were going to be extraordinary. And I really had no, to be quite honest, I had almost no hope. I don't know what I thought would happen, but I said, look, I'm really sorry, but this is the idea. And what I wasn't expecting was the, oh, that's an interesting idea. Like the immediate sort of sense of possibility. And I do think that's very, very rare. What became clear was that this would be a collaboration. And I, at this point, I think it's very important for me to just bring out what I think is profoundly different about working with people from theatre and architecture from visual arts. Because I'd always worked in visual arts. I worked with some fantastic curators. But working in new media, there's a sense that often things don't go right and the piece doesn't keep running and it fails, or it, you know, has to be restarted if it's a, you know, an interactive work. And I'd always felt it was really important to make robust things that really worked all the time. What was different about this relationship, really, the process of it, of bringing this work into being, was this can do, it will be all right on the night, every night, and there will be a team behind you making sure this thing works. And that, I've learned, is really something from theatre. And that's, I think, what Jules brought. One of the things that was distinctive for me about working with Jules Wright was, okay, there's going to be lighting experts that can help, and we're going to have a plan for what's going to happen if one of those light strands stops working, and it's all going to be planned in advance. That to me was new. I wasn't having to come up with every solution myself.
That's fascinating to hear, and I think that idea of working in two completely different disciplines, if you like, and with the strengths of those approaches coming to help and realise your own artwork is very striking. Continuing with music from Laura's wonderful album, The Earth With Her Crowns, which comes from a line by the poet Sappho, there are two more tracks that we could consider in this understanding of how Laura has related sonically to the building and spaces of the Wapping Hydraulic Power Station. Two more tracks: Water's Deep Cathedral and A Space for Dreaming. Let's hear a short excerpt from each of those now. Thank you. and we've been listening to the wonderful music of Laura Connell. I'm also drawn to the essay that was written, commissioned and written for the piece by Jane Rendell, professor at the Barton School of Architecture at UCL. And Jane, a wonderful cultural commentator and critic, creative writer. And she talks about the piece with the subtitle to her essay, A Tribute to the Angels. And she thinks through Paul Klee's image of the angel of history, as made famous by Walter Benjamin, and also talks through Michel Serres' idea of the angel. But she also strikingly thinks about the space and the relationship between space and subjectivity that is much more of a feminist approach to architecture. And I think it's very striking, of course, that you, as the first artist in the Wapping Project in its formal incarnation in the building, of course, were a woman artist. And Jules is very, very strong in supporting women makers, of course, who historically, as we know, have been all too overlooked. But actually to put, you know, the resources that you've described so well behind the work of women artists throughout the history of the Wapping Project in the building. And of course, that continues under Thomas and Marta's co-direction with the Wapping Project in its new incarnation. So I wonder if you could just give us a little sense of how you felt, if this is not a reductive way of thinking about it, as a woman artist at the time of making of this work. Did you feel supported elsewhere? Was there an issue of gender in the larger cultural scene at the time? Was this a distinctive position? Or was it something that you just took in your stride as the next piece of work, as opposed to a work made by a woman artist?
I think it was absolutely key to the project, gender, the gender of the team. I think there's ongoing disparities that artists that identify as women versus men experience to this day. I think in particular now, I didn't think of this at the time, but now when I look at the work, I think the fact that the project was monumental and made by a woman really matters. And one of the things that came out of the project was that I did experience quite a lot of criticism or resentment from some people who said, you know, well, your work's so big. I thought that was interesting. I couldn't imagine a male artist having that levelled at them as a criticism. Yeah, it was big. Jules was she had a huge imagination, a big heart, and she was really, really tough. I come from a family where I was raised to be quite tough too, and I do think that there was a sense of us embarking on this project that people kept telling each of us separately was impossible to achieve. a sense that no, we could do this, and we would do this. And I think you saw that in subsequent projects that Jules and Joshua Wright put together at Wapping. Mine was just one of many, but I do think that the risk that was taken with me was different. I wasn't a really well-known artist that was known for doing these very large physical works. So I didn't have the kind of name that could be trotted around and would attract support and financial support. So I think from that point of view, gender was at play, you know, partly why I didn't have that name, but also just the fact that Jules was prepared to take that risk, I think, was because she saw something in me and my work that she wanted to give space to bring out. And that's very rare as an artist, to encounter somebody that sees that and then pushes the way that she pushed to enable that to happen.
That's tremendous. Thank you very much indeed. And many significant points made there. I'm drawn to your own artistic statement on your personal website, where in three sections you describe the kind of key influences and aspects of your practice. And of course, you end with a paragraph about your mother, Joan, titled "Women Can Do Anything, Artists Matter." And that's a perfect summary, of course, of what you've described. But I've also drawn to the opening proposal on the statement page, which is a love of interdisciplinary collaboration, and there you draw on a number of relationships you've had creatively with engineers, medical researchers, surgeons and scientists, but you absolutely front load both the pleasure and the necessity of that creative and collaborative partnership with other disciplines and other individuals. Now that's obviously a key part of your practice. And how has that that collaborative relationship, if you like, developed since you made Conductor? You've talked very distinctively about how the work was, you know, unexpected within your practice to that date, and you know, you had the, you know, these kind of critiques at the time about the scale and nature of the work. But did it set you off on a very different trajectory in terms of before and after the Wapping installation?
Yes, I think it marked a huge turning point for me, where I realised how much I missed making with physical materials, having worked with digital materials or the immateriality of digital and computation. Now, I still do use computation a lot in my work, but I think what Wapping did was it reconnected me to how important physical materials and space were, and also just like the bodily experience that I might be able to create through my work. The second thing it did, which I think does have an element of gender relations in it, is it made me realise that it was okay to subcontract manufacturing and production of some parts of the work. So for Conductor at the Wapping Project, Jules put me in touch with Howard Eaton Lighting and also a company that created water sculptures, because I had a ripple that came from the back of the room, and I was very obsessional about this ripple. It took almost a day to install, to choreograph or conduct the ripple, because I wanted it to be exact, to emit in a very precise shape. After making Conductor, I felt freer. I felt freed up somehow to retain a very strong kind of artistic or authorial control, but to subcontract the making of certain pieces. So later works, I made a sort of giant 15 to 20 foot snow dome, an inflatable snow dome. Now, I didn't make the dome myself, but actually prior to Wapping, I might have felt that was somehow cheating. I really kind of came up through that school of you do everything yourself. You know, you're in the video, you shoot the video, you edit the video. And I think what Wapping showed me, and the conversations that Jules Wright and I had about models from theatre, just showed me that I could really retain my authorial voice, if you like, but work with teams. At the same time, I wanted to take an approach to working with teams that really honours the people that have taken part and named the names. And I think that's also a feminist practice.
Absolutely, no, tremendous. It comes across very clearly, you know, across the range of your work. I do urge anyone who'd like to pursue Jane's work further to look at her website, janeprofit.com. And now, Jane, you're speaking to us very kindly. Thank you very much indeed for your time from Michigan today. You are now Associate Dean at the Stamp School of Art and Design at the University of Michigan. Now, we're finding ourselves in a very different time from 2000 in all sorts of ways that don't need to be restated. But I guess one of the questions perhaps that we could close with today is the nature and role and possible function, the purpose that art can have at such a time. Over the course of your work to date, has your sense of the kind of possible impact of artistic work shifted and changed? Do you see where and how it can make a difference in the kind of times that we're in now? You mentioned climate change as being a way that we would reconsider Conductor now if it was made again today. And I wonder if your sense of how art's purpose can shift and change and ebb and flow, should we say, to borrow a kind of metaphor of the fluid, as the times need. Where are you up to on that kind of thinking at the moment?
Well, I think that I live about 35 minutes from Detroit, which many people will know is a city that has experienced enormous economic and racial disparities. A city that's half of the size it used to be in terms of population. And one of the things that's very noticeable about Detroit is how the artistic creativity of the communities that remain or have returned to Detroit have changed the fabric of the city and the way the city looks and the way the city's experienced. And I do think that in the interim period, I've also lived and worked in Hong Kong, and when I was there during the umbrella movement. And I do think that at times of incredible stress, social stress, that art can be an incredibly empowering way of people, all of us, finding our voice and expressing ourselves and protesting if necessary. The umbrella movement in Hong Kong was really marked by an extraordinary explosion of artistic production on the streets that really marked that movement. And I think that what we see now that interests me enormously is the it's difficult to say this because people tend to have very, I think, narrow understandings of what community engaged art or socially engaged art might be. But that's something that interests me a lot right now with my own work, is what it means to create artwork with communities or communities to community participants to create their own work that might express parts of their lived experience that are very, very difficult to express in any other form. So I see this time as possibly a time where socially engaged practices by artists surge and change quite considerably.
Well, that's tremendous, Jane. Thank you so much. Just as you so strikingly launched the building life phase of the Wapping Project. So it's wonderful to have hosted you today launching this new podcast series. I think we really have kind of laid out the stall, if you like, of the Wapping Project as a space of curatorial collaboration, of creative freedom, of women's-based work, and also socially engaged practice. And thank you for all those wonderful insights, both on the time of making and your work and practice since then. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and I would urge you, those listeners out there who would like to pursue Jane's work, to visit her website, of course, and also to visit the Wapping Project website, where you can see, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, the film of Conductor, and discover more about the Wapping Project in its building phase, as well as its ongoing practice. Thank you very much indeed for being with us today, Jane Proffitt.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have the opportunity to talk about a piece that's meant so much to me personally and in my career.
Many thanks, Jane. You've been listening to myself in conversation with the artist Jane Proffitt, and we've been listening to wonderful music of Laura Cannell. Both makers have been responding to the remarkable building, the Wapping Hydraulic Power Station, that form part of the installational experiential life of the curatorial project, the Wapping Project. Next week I will be in conversation with two choreographers who also engage with the building in very different ways over the time of the Wapping Project, when it was installed in the building. I'll be speaking to Lee Anderson and to Luca Silverstreaming, and I do hope you can join me there. For all the details of the ongoing podcast series, and of course the archive history and other related activities of the onward life of the Wapping Project, please do visit their website at thewappingproject.org. I look forward to being with you in conversation next week, and thank you very much for your attendance today.